I'm not Roy Orbison. I left my prescription glasses. These are prescription sunglasses I wanted to get a look at. Yeah. They're a good-looking bunch. Because when I take them off, you're all going to be blurry. It's going to be... Oh, that's even better. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning in the Alibi Lounge. I got to put them on for this. I apologize. I'll take them off again. My name is Russell Statz. I'm an alcoholic. I am a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found necessary to take a drink, nor have I had a drink, since January 25th, 1981. And for that, I'm very grateful. You always have to say, I haven't found necessary to take a drink, nor have I had a drink. You know about the guy in Texas, John, who said, I haven't found necessary to take a drink, in 20 years. And his friend Zeke in the front row said, I saw you drunk last night. He said, yeah, but it wasn't necessary. So I've been around for a while. As Ari O'Keefe used to say, you can tell I've been somewhere for a long time. And it's good to be here. I want to thank the committee. I want to thank Charlene and Linda for giving me this opportunity. It's always wonderful when anybody asks you to share their experience, and that's what I'm going to do. Unfortunately, after you've been around for as long as I have, you somehow accidentally or on purpose mix it in with a little bit of your opinion. I'll try to keep a little bit of the bleeding deacon out. And I want to thank y'all here and everybody at this group that's supporting this. This deal is a wonderful deal. It's a wonderful night. I want to also give a shout out. I see a lot of my friends from Dade County, the Homestead area, and some of the rooms around there. That's really Upper Keys. I see Carney Joe and his mother right there, and Merrill. I haven't seen Merrill in a long time, and you're here. Isn't Merrill here? Merrill's got 36 years tonight. 36 years. There she is. Now, Merrill, I've known you for a long time, and I love you. I haven't seen you in a while, but I hope you don't take umbrage at this. It's not meant in any bad spirit, but really, people like you really shouldn't drink. So just thought I'd throw that out to her. And I wanted my wife, my lovely wife, Vicki, is here. She is the reigning queen of Al-Anon, our ladies of perpetual revenge. And she's there with one of my three daughters, the lovely Vanessa, who is my favorite middle daughter. I am the North American distributor of beautiful young Cuban women that like to criticize, and one of them. And she's here with, I have six grandkids, and she's here with two of my beautiful granddaughters. Yes, that's right, the lovely... they are standing up. Stand up. The lovely, that's Andrea, and that's the lovely Natalia. Hi, girl. I got six of those, and they're all about the same size, like midgets and everything. And they're all great. And Armando, her husband, he's there, and my brother Jeffrey's there. Everybody's in the fellowship, and my wife knows how she's teaching them all how to do a Al-Anon 10 step. When I'm wrong, they're promptly admitted. In the book Alcoholics Anonymous on page 29, I'm going to talk a lot about stuff in the book so I don't get too far off track. In the book Alcoholics Anonymous, it says the following, because I really want to stick close to the script. One of the problems with, I've done this a few times in different venues around the United States and outside the United States, and I'm always... I don't want to say puzzled, but it's always sort of interesting when I'm called to do this, because I know what's supposed to happen is I guess I'm supposed to entertain. And I'm really the worst guy to entertain. I'm the worst guy. I've said series one, I'm not a really good entertainer. And entertainment is good. It's good to have a yuck, it's good to have a laugh and stuff like that. But I really like to stay close to the script because I do believe it's important to share certain things that are not necessarily funny. And so I'm just going to read something in our big book, which is sometimes maybe overlooked. It says on page 29, it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual... Remember how it says in the big book, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like. That's where the relief comes from, looking at our stories, our testimony. It says each individual, which would be me, I'm the individual here tonight. You know, you don't have to like what I say. It's not about you. It's really about me. It's my story. I mean, really, don't get upset by anything I say, because I'll probably say some outrageous things that'll piss you off, you know. And you know, they say, you know, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off, you know. And I'll probably say some things that'll piss you off, but on the way home, I'll probably say, why did I say that and change my mind? You'll be all upset about it, but you know how it is. Whenever you throw a rock into a group of dogs, the one that gets, that yelps the loudest is the one that gets hit. Or as our spiritual axiom says, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. But it says each individual, and I'm an individual, in the personal stories, this is going to be about my story, describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. That's what the story, that's what an AA story is about. It's not about, and then I drank, and then I drank, and then I drank, which is sort of good for identification, so a new person could say, gee, I'm like him, and all that sort of stuff. But what separates us from the Kiwanis Club and from all these other deals is in an AA story, ultimately, what you talk about is the solution to all your problems. And that's the way you establish your relationship with God, which is probably why at the very end of the book, it says, see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. It's probably why they say all this stuff like God is doing for you what you can't do for yourself. It's probably why they say at the very end of the book that we all sort of worship and read, and it's our basic text written by our founders. It's probably at the very end of the last page, they say, we know but a little. I mean, that's got to be heartening. You're following these guys around, and at the end they say, we don't know crap. That's why your real reliance has to be on God. It's probably why they say, around the third step, they say, if you sincerely make such a decision, all sorts of remarkable things follow. Being all-powerful, he'll give you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. It's probably why they say, job or no job, wife or no wife. You know, you don't need any of that stuff and stay sober. All you need is to clean house and trust God. It's all about your relationship. It's probably why God's all through this book. You know, so the bottom line is although I'm going to share a little bit, just a little bit about the drinking thing, you got to trust. I mean, why would anybody get up here and do all this stuff for 30 years if there wasn't a drinking thing around? Although I'm going to share a little bit about the drinking thing, I'm going to try to keep it sort of short because I really want to share about the solution. Because I think you all probably know about the problem. And I'm going to tell you something. If you don't know about the problem, you need to drink a little more. Drink it. I'm telling you, the best thing that will help you out with this program is to drink. If you got a problem with this program, I really suggest serious drinking. You know what I mean? I'm not one of these guys that worry about people drinking. The people that don't have this thing, don't get this thing, they're going to drink. You might as well get it over with instead of waiting around for 10 years and then slipping and sliding and drinking and maybe never getting it back and poisoning the rooms. You know what I mean? Might as well go out there and get it over with so you get rid of all that. You know, remember what Dr. Bob said? If you have any type of false pride, false pride, any intellectual pride that keeps you from understanding what we say in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. Remember what they said with the guy in the bed? Bill Dalton? Dotson? When they came to see him? They didn't beg him to come to the fellowship. They said, look, we got this program. But, you know, the program depends upon your belief in God. And if you got a problem with that, he says, listen, there's no problem. We won't waste your time. That's what they say, we won't waste your time. And I always felt that they were really saying, we won't waste our time. And we'll go out and look for somebody who's interested. You know, they were looking for people who were interested in this deal. Because when you're an alcoholic like me, I guess I'll take these off, even though I won't be able to see. When you're an alcoholic like me, and your whole life is filled with feeling sorry for yourself and self-pity and a whole lot of other things. And your best thinking gets you in here. You can bet if you're going to stay in here for 30 years, and not only stay in here for 30 years, but not be a part of the other fellowship in here, the fellowship of the thumb-sucking crybabies, if you're going to stay in here and grow up and be a man, you're going to do that deal. The way my sponsors did it, and the way the men I respect did it, and become part of the fellowship of the Spirit, which is a whole different deal. They talk about it the last page. You'll surely see some of us in the fellowship of the Spirit, which comes from 2 Corinthians, when the Apostle Paul talks about the fellowship of the Holy Spirit. When you start getting involved in that deal, you can bet if you're in here, if you're really serious about this thing, trust me, somewhere along the road, you're going to run into somebody who's going to tell you something about yourself and your life that's going to piss you off. You know, there are a lot of guys in the bars I'm out with that told me all sorts of things that made me feel good. Like, your wife is a bitch, leave her. Or your boss is a jerk. Or they're all stupid. Or you're right, you know. And you know the typical bar talk. But you come in here, and you know, and I used to stay away from guys that would tell me things I didn't want to hear because they were stupid. You know, because I was always right. I was always alky right. You know what alky right is? If you disagree with me, you got to die because you're just so dumb. And, you know, somewhere along the line in here, you know how they say we get a new perspective by 100 forms of, you know, what is it? The crushing of humiliation and the crushing of our self-sufficiency. And I was going to give my world famous talk on humility, but I never do it with a group this small. You know, I usually do it for a larger deal. So we're not going to do that. So here's the deal. Let me start off and give a little, I have a few stories I'm going to tell you. And, It may throw some light on some things. It's, you know, when you've been around for 30 years, I'm not going to talk too much about drinking, but when you were around for 30 years in AA, 31 years, and then you did about 31 years before you came to AA, it's hard to squeeze it all in, you know, 40 minutes or 60 minutes or 3.5 hours, whatever we got here today. But I'm going to try to throw in a few stories. The way I figure with an AA deal is I've done this enough to understand that if you got 200 people in a room, people are hearing 200 different stories. I've had people come up to me and say, I really got something out of it when you said this. And sometimes it's not even stuff I said. It's just stuff they heard, you know. But that's okay. They got something out of it. I take credit for it anyway. It doesn't matter. And you know, you'll have 10 people tell you they got 10 different things out of the story because it really doesn't depend because people don't see the world the way it is. They see the world the way they are. And there are people here that are on the third step and people on the 10th step. And there are people that have 2 years and there are people that got 20 years. And I have a real heart for old time. I sponsor a lot of guys in their 20s. You know, when I say they're 20 years sobriety. And I know that it's possible to have 15, 20 years and live a life of quiet desperation. And be going to meetings and be doing the deal and be staying sober, but not experiencing much of heaven and being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. You know, they said we've experienced much of heaven. He says the great fact is this and nothing less. We've experienced much of heaven and we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. And I got to tell you something, I don't think they're talking about stopping drinking. What do you think? Stopping drinking is, you know, the ante in the poker game. You know, I mean, I guess there's two doors in Alcoholics Anonymous. One door that is the not drinking door. It's right over there. There's 10,000 people lined up in the not drinking door. There's another door over there, you know, and that's the experience much of heaven, been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence door. And there's like 3 or 4 people lined up over there. And every once in a while you see a guy come from the not drinking door, and he walks across the room to the experience much of heaven, been rocketed in the fourth dimension door. But you very rarely hear it see a guy from the rocketed in the fourth dimension door walking over to the other side of the not drinking door. You don't see that deal. So I want to talk to you about the solution to this deal and what's happened to me in my life and how it sort of worked out with me. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 31 years old. Had my last drink, as I said, January 25th, 1981. I'll tell you one story. I've got a lot of stories. I've got a lot of drinking stories, but I'll just tell you one story about that deal. When I was in my 20s, I married a very nice young lady, a lovely gal, and she produced a wonderful son. You know, we had a beautiful son. And I had the American dream going on. I was a division chief in the Dade County State's Attorney's Office under Janet Reno and Dick Gerstein, trying mostly murder cases. You know, I was 100 pounds lighter. I was a legend in my own mind. I was in charge of 5 attorneys. I had a house on Miami Beach on the Gores Country Golf Course. I had a beautiful wife, beautiful child. I had everything that you think you would need in order to be okay. But I was not okay. Now, I didn't know I was not okay because I thought I was fine, you know, and I don't know, there was something, you know, my problem, you know, I'm an alcoholic, you know, what I guess I mean is, I don't know, somehow, some way, alcohol does something for me that no car can do, no woman can do, you know, no amount of money can do, no new suit can do. Somehow alcohol does something for me that I can't do for myself, and so I drank it. And if alcohol did for you what it did for me, you drink it too, believe me. And my problem in my life is that alcohol stopped working for me. And of course, the real problem in my life is it stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me. And I hurt a lot of people, you know. But But that's the deal. So I had this this deal going on, and one day after I'd been married for about 5 years, I was getting up. It was a Friday morning, and I'm not a stupid man. You know, I'm not. I mean, I've got degrees to prove how smart I am and all that sort of stuff. And I got up one morning. I was in my blue suit and my white shirt and my red tie, getting ready to drive across the causeway and go to work. And my wife came up to me and said to me this. And this is what she said. She said, "I just want you to know, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you." That's what she said. I think it's 10 words. I'm not sure. I haven't counted them out. If you come home drunk one more time, I am leaving you. 12 words. Now, and I was as sober when she said that to me as I am standing here right now. As a matter of fact, I was doing a lot better. I was much smarter. I mean, let me tell you something. Being in AA for 31 years will really dumb you up. First of all, when I came into AA, I only had two neurons working, and they were waving goodbye to each other. You know what I mean? And I know I've gotten really stupid in AA. You know why? Because heavy-duty thinking just is, I can't do it anymore. You know what I mean? So I barely think at all. And every time I am asked to think by sponsees, like they'll ask me a question, and I'll say something to them, what the answer is, they tell me I don't understand. So I must not be that bright. They just keep on asking me my opinion. I keep on giving it to them. They keep on telling me you don't understand. So I don't know. So I must not be too sharp. I'm probably like those guys in the big book. We know but a little. I just don't know much, you know. And you know, I just know that. I just know I love that rocket ship ride. You know, I love that ride. That ride is a good deal. You know, I'll let the smart guys. My sponsor once asked me, "Would you rather be right or happy?" I looked at him like he was crazy. I said, "Both." He says, "You can't have both." You know, I had to be right, because when you feel like a piece of crap, you always have to be right. And most alcoholics, not this group. I can see by this group. Yeah. Yeah, this group is definitely a cut above. I am, without question, you guys are the Mensa of Alcoholics Anonymous. So whenever I sort of deprecate or put down AA or you know, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, understand, don't get upset. I'm not talking about this group, which is clearly at a higher level. You know, but I can tell you this. One thing I learned over the years is the Fellowship, it ain't Well People's Anonymous. So you can either start, believing what they talk about in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, or you can start paying attention to the, quote, wisdom of the rooms. I want to stay away from that wisdoms of the room stuff. So in any event, my wife at that time told me, "You come home drunk more." 12 words. "You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you." I've tried. There's not an ounce of fat in that. And she wasn't starting a fight. It was like she was delivering the mail. It's, you know, just thought I'd let you know. I mean, apparently she wasn't codependent. She was like one of these gals that had self-esteem. I don't know how I found her. She just wasn't going to hang around drunk and take this crap. She wasn't going to hang around for 30 years, you know, and wait around for dinner all night while I came in at 3 o'clock in the morning. Or why I lied to her. I hung out with her. She just wasn't going to do it, because apparently she wasn't an alcoholic and she actually thought she was a decent person and didn't deserve that. You understand that kind of deal? I didn't understand it, but that's what she said to me. If you come up now... I would examine that statement. You know, I don't think there's a spare word in there. What word would you take out? If? You? Drunk? I mean, there's not an ounce of fat in that statement. If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. Now, here's my theory on that. If you don't understand something like that, in other words, if that doesn't make sense to you, if that doesn't make sense to you, my theory is, I didn't know this at the time, I was like, you know, 27 or something, 26, is if you don't understand a statement like that, my theory is somewhere down the road in your life, you're going to get into a heap of trouble. You know, that's the kind of statement where a judge says, "Son, if I see you one more time in front of me, you're going to jail." And then you walk out and you say, "What the hell do you mean by that?" You know what I mean? It's like, what's he talking about? What's that? You know, and alcoholics apparently, for some reason, don't understand straightforward declaratory sentences. Because when I got in my car and I drove 3 blocks down the street toward the first traffic light, I remember exactly what I said to myself. I said,
what the hell did she mean by that? And you know, now 30 years down the road, after dealing with thousands of alcoholics and sponsoring guys and reading up on myself and learning about myself and everything, I now understand the axiom, how that relates to alcoholism. And I now understand, having watched myself and watched other alcoholics when I told them the truth, you know, the old Jack Nicholson thing, I have a law office. And in my office, I have a sign. It's the Jack Nicholson quote from A Few Good Men. And the sign says this: the truth, you can't handle the truth. And because I now realize that whenever an alcoholic or any diseased personality that lives in its own world, the world of Russell, you know, the earth, Russell land, whenever an alcoholic hears, sees, or is told or reads something he doesn't like, it confuses him, or it pisses him off, or he gets him angry. And what he does is he either ignores it, or he just crosses you off the list of somebody who's stupid and doesn't understand. And so what happens is, if you're an alcoholic, you can be confronted with the truth about yourself. You can be told the truth about yourself. You can have the greatest, wisest man come up to you and say, listen, buddy, here's the truth. I'm handing you the truth. This will solve your life. And if it bothers you, or if it doesn't fit within your theology, what happens? You just cross it out. It's confusing. You just walk away. And then 20 years later, in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're lucky to make it, all of a sudden you're living that truth. And you're forgetting. You were told that thing, you know, 5 years before you came in. And you thought it was a joke. You thought it was a joke. You know, there's a lot of things. Do you remember, now I got a bunch of alcoholics here, right? Now, you remember when you first came into alcohol, I don't know if you were like me. I looked the guy in the eye, and this is what I said. I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. Now, you may not have said those exact words, but that's what I said. I didn't say, I'm powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. Nothing wrong with that. I didn't say that, but I think it gets the same thought across. I looked the man in the eye, and I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. Now, a week before that, I would have said, I need a new girlfriend. A week before that, I would have said, I need some money. You know, a week before that, I said, I need a different job or a different... I would have said I needed a whole lot of other things. But somehow, some way, I was given the gift at a time when I was the worst off intellectually. It had to be from God, where all of a sudden it was clear to me, because when you're an alcoholic like me, your life becomes a bottle. My life became a bottle. And so what happened is, I mean, I may have had a million different problems, but what happened is, in the end, my life became a bottle. I had no problems. I was living inside a bottle. I'd wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to drink today. By 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I was drunk. I'd wake up the next morning, I'm not going to buy booze today. By 5 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm searching for dimes, nickels, and quarters so I can buy a quart bottle of Carlos Rossi Chianti and sit by my phonograph with LP records. Some of you young people don't know what an LP record is. And play these songs over and over again on my favorite songs, you know. Things like Running on Empty, you know, I'm Mr. Blue, Only the Lonely, Roy Orbison, A Pirate Looks at 40, Rainy Days and Mondays, Self-Centered, Selfish, Crybaby Alky's favorite hits, you know what I mean? And I'd be able to sit and think about my life, and you know, you have a vivid imagination to think about all those women that treated me badly, how terribly sorry they would be after I was dead, and I'd sort of think about my funeral and all those good-looking blondes and brunettes sitting around the coffin crying their eyes out. Of course, I was behind the tree. You know, it serves her right. You should have treated me better, you know. And I'm sure you're laughing. You don't know what it's like, you know. It's, you know, and that kind of stuff. And so what happens is I have this sign. It says, it's behind my desk. It says the truth, you can't handle the truth. Because most of the people that come to my office, I'm not saying they're all alcoholics or drug addicts, but, you know, all of them, most people that, listen, people don't like seeing lawyers because you have to pay money for their advice. And you have to pay me a lot of money for my advice. And the bottom line is, so nobody who comes to me because they want to be there. They don't want to be, they've done everything. And 99% of the people that come to me don't come to me because they happen to be walking along the street and they were hit by an asteroid. They come to me because they have been doing something in their life, some sort of behavior in their life, over a period of weeks and months and years, and somehow, some way, lying to themselves or rationalizing, they've been telling themselves rational lies that allows them to continue the horrible behavior and getting away with it, and they don't need any help, and they've somehow justified it in their mind. So whether they're an alcoholic, or a drug addict. Because, you know, the bottom line is, a lot of the crap we have going for ourselves after we put down the booze, because after we put down the booze, we're just a bunch of sober people with the same crap going on that they have out there. The only difference is if we don't solve the crap, we end up drinking and dying. They don't drink, they just live a life of cried desperation and feel sorry for themselves all the time. Or blow their brains out or get depressed. We get arrested. That's the only difference. But it's the same deal. Because I've dealt with this stuff. And these people come in just like we come in. And they come in after doing this crap for 3 years, 4 years, 10 years, whatever it is, and all of a sudden something's happened with their life. Something's happened with their life where, as a result of living the life the way they live it and thinking the way they're thinking, there's been a nuclear explosion. There's been a 3 Mile Island. They've been indicted. They've been arrested. They've been served with divorce papers. Something horrible has happened. And they walk into my office and they sit down and they proceed to tell me a story. They tell me their story. It sounds like this. It sounds like you don't understand. It's not my fault. They made me do it. Yeah, I did it, but if they hadn't have done this, I wouldn't have done this. You know, and it's a story about how they're not to blame and somebody else is to blame, and they absolutely positively believe it. And I know, because I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm a sober member here, and because I can think a little bit differently, and I've been given the wisdom that God gives us once we get in here, I know that if they tell that story to the judge, no matter how sincere they are, he's putting them under the jail. Not in the jail, he's going to go under the jail. So I have that sign, I say, you see that sign? And my first job with a new client, just like this with a new sponsee, when we do the fourth step or we talk to them, is somehow, some way, over a period of time, get them to come from planet Russell down to Earth, where we all actually live. So that they understand, if you spend more money than you make, you go into debt. Did you know that? I didn't know that. They took away my credit cards when I was 9 years sober. I was doing step meetings all around the place. I was sober. I was sponsoring people. Why'd they take them away? Because you're not paying them. Did you know if you spend more money than you make, you go into debt? I went to my sponsor. I said, I needed money. He says, I can solve that problem. I said, you can? He said, absolutely. I said, oh, thank God. Because I have money problems and they cause anxiety. And I said, I can solve. My sponsor said, I can solve the money problem. I said, so how do you solve it? He says, now listen to me. You need to earn more or spend less. I said, well, wait a second. What's option three? Isn't there like a third option? I'm earning as much as I can. I'm saying, yeah, spend less. He'd say, you got to simplify your life. And I knew that had something to do with giving up my Cadillac. You know, whenever somebody tells you something you don't want to hear, it confuses you. And you get angry. You know what I mean? But I didn't have to worry about giving it up. I really didn't have to worry about it because they just took it away anyway. You know? And so what happens is you understand that we are in denial about a lot of things. Many things. And if you think, if the stuff you have to surrender in AA to get to that rocket ship ride, the old ideas that you have to give up to get to that rocket ship ride, because, you know, we learn later on, you ready for this stuff? We come to AA because of what? Drinking, right? I came to AA because I couldn't stop drinking. You know what I learned later on? I mean, this is amazing. This is amazing stuff. That drinking isn't even the problem. I mean, it becomes the problem. They arrest us for drinking. I mean, that's why they arrest. They don't arrest you for self pity. They don't say, I'm sorry, I have to stop you. I've noticed, are you feeling sorry for yourself? You know, I mean, they arrest you for gluttony. You know, excuse me, Mrs. Spatz, will you please get on that scale? I've noticed you're driving, you're kind of overweight. You know, arrest you for lusting. Excuse me, Mrs. Spatz, I couldn't help but notice that you're thinking about that gal again. I'm going to have to stop and give you a ticket, you know. They're feeling sorry for you. So, you know, and no, they arrest you for drinking. And your life goes into a hole and terrible things happen to you because you're drinking. But then you read this book, it says drinking is but a symptom of our disease. Our real disease centers on our mind, not our body. It says alcoholics are men and women who drink because they, you know why? They drink because they lack, they need, they're restless, they're irritable, they're discontented. And they're talking about us sober. They're talking about us sober. We're restless, irritable, discontented unless you can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. I mean, for me, I started getting relief when I was driving up to the bar. Driving up to the bar, I started getting relief. Like Pavlov's dogs, you know what I mean? And so I started, in the end, you come in here thinking that alcohol is a problem, And the problem is alcohol's the solution. Sobriety is the problem. If it wasn't for alcohol, I would have blown my brains out before I was 18 years of age. Alcohol is the solution. Alcohol is that thing. As a matter of fact, I didn't even experience alcoholism until I stopped drinking. You don't even know what alcoholism is. I experienced something called drunk. But drunk is not alcoholism. You know, if I got a guy here who's an alcoholic and a guy here who's a non-alcoholic and I got them both drunk, you wouldn't know the difference. Drunk is just drunk. Drunk, I never experienced alcoholism because when I was active, if alcoholism was 20 miles away and I was feeling restless and irritable, discontented or whatever it was, and I didn't even understand that was alcoholism, it was not alcoholism. It's just the way I am. I used to say to my sponsor, well, that's just my personality. He said, Russ, it's your personality that's killing you. It's not the booze, it's your personality. You know, if alcoholism reared its ugly head and I didn't know what it was, because what you don't know it's alcoholism because it's just the way you feel. I mean, isn't that what, you know, if you want to talk about worshiping, you know what alcoholics worship? What's that song? Feelings. Everything's feelings trump everything. Yeah, I shot him, but he made me feel bad. Yeah, I mean, you know, everything is my feelings, the way I feel. I feel. So what happened to me is when alcoholism raised its ugly head, and I didn't know it was alcoholism. I didn't know this thing was alcoholism. It was just the way I felt. I don't know what you would do, but I'd say, I need a drink. Did you ever say, I need a drink? You know why you needed a drink? Because you're alcoholic. Because you can't handle sobriety. Because you're restless, you're irritable, you're discontented, and string a thousand other things after that. Selfishness, self-centeredness, through 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, we step on the toes of others, they retaliate. We must get rid of selfishness, it kills us. It says 100 forms of fear. It says 100 forms of fear. You know what that means? If you figured out three or four or 10 things you're scared of, you got 90 more to go. It comes at you in 100 forms. And so, you know, I mean, that's the deal. So I come in here, and I think the problem is alcohol, and I get rid of the alcohol, and then the fun begins. Now I'm dealing, now I don't have my drug of choice. You know, now I'm looking around for the gal to get laid, for the guy, for the house, for the car, for the money, for the this, because somehow, some way, those sort of things, those idols that I sort of worship, when I get them, they make me feel good for a second, for a minute, for an hour, whatever it is, and then I get to go to discussion meetings and worry about how I don't have that stuff. I end up chasing the same crap I was chasing before I came in here, living the same lifestyle and getting the same crap, except now I don't have the alcohol, but eventually I will go back to the alcohol or somehow mess it up some other way. So if you think the alcohol, giving up the alcohol is a problem, if you think that old idea... You know, I happen to believe, based upon working in Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsoring people, that really the easiest thing is getting rid of the alcohol. You know, I don't know everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been around for a long time. I've seen a lot of stuff. You know, my perspective comes from looking back on these things over 30 years and working with a lot of people. So I'm not saying I know everybody or everything, but I'm just telling you based upon, I'm not making this stuff up. This is stuff I've seen. I've rarely seen somebody who wants to stop drinking. You know, you come to Alcoholics Anonymous because you want to stop drinking, you want to stop drugging, whatever it is. I have rarely seen somebody come to Alcoholics Anonymous that doesn't somehow, some way, admit, you know, I'm powerless over alcohol, my life is unmanageable, they start going to groups and they stop drinking. Now, it's true, they may only stop drinking for 30 days. They may stop only drinking for a year, or for 3 years, or for 10 years, and then eventually go back. But you want to, as far as the drinking stuff goes, most people somehow get in here and they get that. They get that. It's very hard to stay in that sit in a room and not get that there's a problem with alcohol. You put the plug in the jug and you stay sober one day at a time. But I want you to think, and I would bet that most of the people in here, if you all are alcoholics, I suppose you're alcoholics, most of you, I would get agreement on the fact that you agree with me that you're an alcoholic. In other words, if I said to you, you know, you're just an alcoholic, you'd say you're damn right. Some of you not only admit that you're an alcoholic, you'll even say to me that being an alcoholic and learning you're an alcoholic was the best thing that ever happened to you. There are some people in here that'll even say to me, you ready for this? I'm a grateful alcoholic. Not only won't you deny it, you'll say it's the best thing that ever happened to me, and I'm grateful I'm an alcoholic. There are people in here that'll say that, right?
Now I want you to think about something. Maybe you're one of those people. You got no problem. You don't get upset with me when I say, you know, you got a drinking problem. You're an alcoholic. You know, one of the reasons we laugh when I said, you know, you really shouldn't drink, you know? Because, you know, that's obvious stuff. Of course you shouldn't drink. She's an alcoholic. We don't drink. You know what I mean? So I want you to think about something. Think about a year before you came in here. A year before you came in here. How you reacted when somebody suggested to you that you might have a drinking problem. I'm not talking about you sitting here right now saying, yeah, of course I'm an alcoholic. I'm a grateful alcoholic. Hey, well, hey, let's go to the gratitude dinner. I'm talking about a year before you came in here. Russell Spatz comes up to you and I say, I think you ought to look at your drinking. I think you have a drinking problem. I want you to, you know, like my wife says to me, to come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I want you to think about how you would react. Whether you would say, yeah, you know something? You're right. Absolutely right. As a matter of fact, I'm grateful you pointed that out, you know? Or you want to say, why don't you mind your own flipping business, you know? I see from where you're at that you think I have a drinking problem, but I don't have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems. As a matter of fact, my drinking perfectly matches my problems, so pretty soon my problems are going to go away, so why don't you just screw yourself and mind your own business, and then I'd want to talk to you about your mother and a whole bunch of other things, the worst thing I know about you. So if you remember, and probably most of us before we came in here, sometime, whether it was 6 months or a year before we came in here, was talked to by somebody who suggested we might have a drinking problem, and we crossed them off our list, and we told them they were full of crap, and we were absolutely sure that we were right, and they were wrong, and we would fight for our right to be right, even to the point where they take away our kids, go to the state penitentiary, whatever. We were not going to give up drinking because that was not the problem. So now you come in here and some crazy guy like me, who is your sponsor, says, you know, I think you better stop thinking about the sex thing. Why don't you give up this thing with the broads? I want you to start going to men's meetings. I want you to say, you know, something, I want you to stop that thing with that gal. You know what I mean? Because you don't understand something, but it's killing you. It's pulling you back. You know what I mean? Because all you're doing is worshiping vaginas. And all you're doing is thinking about that crap. You know what I mean? And that stuff is bullshit. You know what I mean? Because you can't have a relationship with a dog. Because with you, it's all selfish and self-centered, and it's all lust. Now, just because you look at me and you tell me, you're full of crap, you don't understand what you're talking about, that's a bunch of bullshit, why don't you go mind your own business, doesn't necessarily mean it's not true. Doesn't necessarily mean it's not true. When they say we got to get rid of our old ideas, the result was nil until we let go absolutely. There's a lot more ideas you got to get rid of in here that I've learned over 30 years besides I just can't have a drink. All I got to do is put a plug in the jug. There's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that don't make it to 10 years, don't make it to 20 years, don't make it to 30 years. Fall by the wayside, or maybe even have 20 years. But it's 20 years of sobriety where they're feeling crappy about themselves, saying crappy things about other people, thinking bad stuff about other people. That's not the kind of stuff I need, because there's a lot of old ideas about themselves and their lives that they just don't want to get rid of, and they don't even want to hear about it, even concern themselves with. And it blocks them. And I can promise you this, as an alcoholic, my chief characteristic is defiant. I'll fight you to the end before I get rid of the stuff that I want to hang on to. And that's the stuff that's going to kill me. So I'm riding in my car, in the car with my first sponsor, Bob Sullivan. I've had three sponsors, all wonderful men, all with 20, 30 years. Incredible, incredible men. I heard a long time ago that the man you'll be in the next 5 years will depend upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. And quite frankly, I believe the books you read depends upon who you hang out with. So basically, who you hang out with is real important. And so, I'm riding this car with Bob Sullivan, and we're going to pick up Bobby. Bob sponsored me. Now, this gets a little confusing. Bob sponsored me, and he also sponsored Bobby. We were like litter mates. I picked up a white chip. I'm a white chip wonder. I picked up a white chip. I never drank again. I'm not saying it's a big deal or I did take any. I give it all to God. Because if it was up to me, I'd be drunk and crazy, believe it. I've lived with myself for 30 years. I know where I'm old. I know what's going on in my mind. You know, I don't deserve any of this stuff. This is all God's handiwork. That's why, you know, anything you see in me that you like has to do with his image. Because that's what the sixth step says. It says that's where we separate the man from the boys. So there's a separation that happens in here. You know, in the sixth step, it says this is the step that separates the men from the boys. That's what it says in the sixth step. You know why that is? Because there's a separation. Did you know that? There's a separation. It's not necessarily a 50-50 separation or a 70-30 separation or a 90-10 separation. It could be a 95%, 5% separation. But there's a separation. The separation in the big book, in the 12 and 12, and this isn't for me. This is what it says, unless you don't read it because you don't, you know, because it's one of those things that you cross off the list because it confuses you, is the man who separates out from the pack is the one who wants to grow in the image and likeness of his creator. And we'll do that repeatedly because the most important thing in his life is not the girl, not the car, but it's God and a relationship with God. That's what it says in the 12 and 12. You may not like it, but that's, you know, I'm just repeating what it says. You know, personally, I think, you know, a new Jag would probably do it. Or a lot of money or stuff like that, but that's not what it says in the 12 and 12. So the bottom line is that we're driving up to pick up Bobby. I picked up the white chip and I never drank it, but Bobby, every 30 days, would drink. He was one of these guys, you know, he'd say, it's coming on that time again. You know, some guys have timers. Some guys are 90 days, and they say, it's coming up on that time again, you know? And I'm sort of like, I've got like about, I don't know what I had, about 6 months, 9 months at the time, and I would go up with Bobby, and we'd pick him up at bar. We'd pick Bobby up. He would drink. We'd bring him back. Bob would give Bobby his job. He'd give him a few bucks. He'd take him around the meetings. Bobby would do good for a few weeks, and then after 30 days, he'd drink again. And we'd go pick him up again and bring him back again, and that was Bobby's deal. You know, and of course, and I was very upset because, you know, because, well, everything upset me. I was a resentment waiting to happen. I once asked my second sponsor, Joe Snyder, I said, do you ever get resentments? He said, get them, I give them. You know, I'm sitting there with my jaw, these guys would say things, I didn't get it. I could not sleep at night if I thought one person didn't like me. You know, I was like Marlon, that line about Marlon Brando, if I go to a party and there's 300 people and one doesn't like me, I gotta leave. You know what alcoholics do when you invite them to a party? They say this, who's gonna be there? They gotta know who's gonna be, because if there's somebody that they don't like, they can't go. Those are the same guys, those alcoholics are the same guys that say things like, I don't give a shit what they think about me. But what you ultimately learn is anybody who says, tells themselves that they don't give a damn what people think about them, all they do is think about what other people think about them. Because people that really don't give a shit about what other people think about them don't say, I don't give a shit what people think about me. They say things like, pass the salt, I'll take some ketchup, and they don't say that stuff. You know what I mean? The only people that say that stuff are alcoholics because they feel so crappy about themselves. We don't have an ego problem, we have a lack of ego problem. Because we feel so crappy about ourselves, that's why wherever you place us, we're like chameleons. If you're an alcoholic, you're a please love me a holic, don't reject me a holic, accept me into the group a holic, you know, they won't like me a holic. You know, it's all about what I look like and how I am and all. So we're going up to pick up Bobby. And I'm getting all upset about this because he's taking advantage of my sponsor who's got 20 years who doesn't understand what's going on here. You know what I mean? And I'm a lawyer, so I've got my 3x5 cards. I've got my opening statement, and Bobby, my sponsor, I was unfortunately under-sponsored. I should have been sponsored by Albert Einstein or Jesus Christ, but they were not available at the time. So they stuck me with this guy who was a used car salesman, you know, an alcoholic from Chicago who didn't even graduate the sixth grade. I once took him into my office, and I have an office with a wall that's about 30, I'm telling you, National Science Foundation fellow, there's like 30 certificates and degrees on the wall. And I said, Bobby, these are my degrees. And he looks at me and he says, you know, Russell, rectal thermometers have degrees, and you know what degrees are. This is the kind of disrespect. I was abused. I was abused as a sponsor. He abused me. You know, but I was vulnerable. You know, you come in here, you're new, you're vulnerable, you're sucking your thumb, you don't know what's right, you don't know what's wrong, you know. They're saying things to you, they're making you hurting your feelings and stuff like that. And he said, so I looked at him, I said, Bobby ought to turn this car around. This guy Bobby's full of crap. He's just playing you. He's not really serious. We did this last month. We did it the month before. We did it the month before that. And I was just going at it, pulling out the 3x5 cards. I had photographs. I had pictures. I had exhibits. I mean, I was so right. Listen, and you want to know something? To this day, I know I was right.
He didn't care. He was this. He was that. You know, we ought to turn this car around. We ought to screw it. You know, this thing. He's taking advantage of you. He does that. You know, man. You know, and I'm going crazy. You know, I'm my own lynch mob. You know what I mean? You know, when you're an alcoholic, you know. And then I finally, you know, I talked for about 20 minutes. I'm yelling and screaming, turn the car around. You're stupid. Let him stay there and everything like that. And so somehow it was hurting my feelings because, you know, if you're not calling yourself self-centered, it's all about you. No matter what's going on, if you're in Bangladesh, you're taking it personally. You know what I mean? I'm the guy who's in a car and there's a 10,000 car traffic jam and everybody's in it. And I'm saying, why me? You know, and, you know, why is this always happen to me? You know, and the body, no matter what, Hurricane Andrew, why me? You know, and so I'm saying, I do this whole thing with him for about 20 minutes. And then finally, I sort of like tire myself out, and I stop talking, and my sponsor turns to me, you know, the dumb guy. And he says, are you done? And I go, yeah. And he says, no, are you done? Because he could see, you know, as alcohol, I was still having the argument with the committee in my head. I was doing it, you know, because it takes time to slow that locomotive down, you know. Sometimes it takes a week or two. And because I had really convinced myself now, you know, and I was so good at convincing myself that I was right. And so he says, are you done? I said, yeah, I'm done. I said, are you sure? He said, are you sure? He says, yes, I'm done. Now, what could he say? I was right. I'm a lawyer. I'm a division chief. I try murder cases. I was right. He looks at me, I look at him, he says, are you done? I said, yeah. He says, Russell. I said, what? He says, Russell. I said, what? He says, listen to me. He says, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. I look at him, I say, how can it not bother you? Everything bothers me. And the problem was, I wanted everything he had. He wanted nothing I had. He had had what I had, and he wanted nothing. 9 years later, and I'm not a dummy. 9 years. By the way, I didn't tell you the end of that story with the gal, you know, the first wife. Come on, drunk one time, I'm leaving you. That day, I stopped in the bar. I had one drink. I said to my buddy, I said, I got to leave. Because Ronnie says, if I come on drunk one time, she's leaving me. He says, she loves you. He's great. He says, no, I got to have one. I got you. And it was 4:30 and 30 seconds. I had one more drink. Next thing I remember, it was 4 o'clock in the morning. They drove me home, and that was the end of my marriage. I just guess I just didn't understand the sentence. 9 years later, I'm with my other sponsor. My first sponsor died. I'm with Joe Snyder. And I call him up. I call up Joe. This is how long it takes to get this stuff, to understand this stuff, to incorporate into life and not only do the steps, but live the steps and then become the steps and become the principles. This is how long it takes. 9 years. And I'm doing AA like nobody's doing AA. I mean, I'm doing step meetings around town. I'm sponsoring people. I'm doing the whole deal. You know, I'm the banquet chairman, all this sort of stuff, in a group twice in a row, doing the whole deal. 9 years later, I'm on the phone with my sponsor, telling him about my wife, my beautiful current wife, who had apparently, you know, she doesn't appreciate me, you know what I mean? She doesn't obey, she disobeys all the time. She thinks she's right and I'm wrong, you know, whatever, I don't know what it was, she spent money, she did something. She made me upset, she made me angry. Don't you love that? You know what I mean? That's the greatest thing between being a newcomer and an old-timer, you know, it's one of the greatest gifts I've gotten, you know. I used to always have people make me angry, make me upset, make me mad, make me depressed. You know, when people are making you depressed and making you angry and they did this and they did that and you're talking about all that discussion meetings and you give them the details and you're telling everything what everybody said, so they'll say, you're right and he's wrong. And you know the problem with people making you angry, making you upset, if they make you angry and they make you upset, you know what that means? That means you're not responsible because it's not your fault. It's their fault. You know what that also means? That means you're always going to be a victim. You'll never not be a victim because you know the big book says, it says most people are emotionally disturbed and frequently wrong. Did you hear what that? I say it says most people. This is what it says. We learned that most people are emotionally disturbed and frequently wrong. That's our book says most people are emotionally disturbed and frequently wrong. And I don't know about you, but my life is populated by people. So I got a book that say we learn at the fourth step that most people are emotionally disturbed and frequently wrong. Not even wrong sometimes. Frequently wrong. So get this. When you say it's wrong, it's not right, you're right. The big book justifies, it says you're right. They're crazy. Listen, people are crazy, and most of the time they're wrong. You're right, and you're right in the middle of it. And to make it even worse, it says the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, have the power to kill. That means the wrongdoings of others, even if they're imaginary, fancied or real, imaginary or real, have the power to kill. So get this. Most of the time they're wrong. Most of the time they're crazy. But even if they're not crazy, if they're right, we imagine they're wrong anyway. And then it says we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, if it kills us, we're involved with a bunch of crazy people that are frequently wrong, and it'll kill us, you know what I mean, unless we figure it out. I mean, it's a scary deal. And so when you're involved in that situation, and they say the grouch and the brainstorm is not for us, you know, you start saying things, you live your whole life just knowing that you're mad and upset because of what your wife did, or because of what your boss did, or because of the way they're treating you, and it makes absolute sense to you. Makes absolute sense to you. And the problem is that means you're a victim your entire life because you have no shot of ever changing them. You have no shot of ever fixing them. And you don't have to take any responsibility for your feelings or your behavior because it's not your fault. It's their fault. Because if they didn't act that way, you wouldn't feel that way. And you know what I noticed about old-timers, guys who have been around for a while? They don't go to meetings and start talking about how people are making them feel. You know what I learned about myself somehow along the way? I don't know how this happened. One day, I stopped complaining. I don't know what happened. It wasn't because stuff wasn't happening. It wasn't because, you know, when they told me I had cancer, you know what I mean? It wasn't because, you know, cancer is a good thing. It just didn't affect me. It didn't seem that big a deal. It wasn't because my wife doesn't do the things she does sometimes, or my kids don't do the things they do, or stuff doesn't happen. It's because whatever they did, it just didn't affect, it wasn't worth talking about because it didn't bother me that much. You know, like my first sponsor said, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. So I call up this guy after 10 years, Joe Snyder, it's all connected, and I give him this 20-minute dissertation on my wife and everything she did, the way we do a discussion meetings, you know, pound for pound, word for word, exactly, she said this, I said that, she said this, I said that, she said this, I said that, and then I finish. And he says to me the following, after I finished, and I was upset, he said, do you know why you're upset? I'm like 9, 10 years sober. I'm telling this whole story, I give it to him in detail, and he says, do you know why you're upset? And I say, well, of course I know why I'm upset. He says, well, why are you upset? I said, what do you mean, why am I upset? Well, why are you upset? I said, Joe, I just spent 20 minutes telling you in detail every single thing my wife did. She spent this money. I said this. I told her not to. She said this. And then he said to me this. He said, that's not why you're upset. Now, let me tell you something. When you're an alcoholic like me and you're brilliant and smarter than everybody else in the world, and you know you're right, and you know why you're upset, because who can know better about you than you? As a matter of fact, you're unique. Nobody can understand you because your problems are so unique anyway. How could you possibly tell anybody because they don't understand? And you finally tell somebody that's something so clear as to why you're upset because you know why you're upset because this is like when you knew you could drink. You know you're upset, and why you're upset, this is clear to you. And then all of a sudden, this guy who you trust is your sponsor, he says, that's not why you're upset. And I said, that's not why I'm upset? He said, no, that's not why you're upset. That's not why I'm upset. What I just told you. He says, no, that's not why you're upset. He didn't say anything else. Not another thing. So I said, well, do you know why I'm upset? He says, of course. He shut up. He says, you know why I'm upset? He says, sure. So what, are you going to tell me why I'm upset? You really want to know? Well, of course I want to know. Why am I upset? He said, listen, stupid. He was like my first sponsor, you know what I mean? He said, listen, stupid, you're upset because you're upsettable. Because it's like Zen AA. You know, the truth is, I now realize 20 years later that he was actually telling me the same message, the same thing that my first sponsor told me when I had 6 months, when he said, he said it a little bit differently. He said, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. He said, you're upset because you're upsettable. I'm not upsettable about it. Yes, he's doing all this stuff. He's drinking every 30 days, but it doesn't bother me. It doesn't upset me. It's not the world or its people or what's happening in the world or the foolishness of people or the way they act. That's the problem. I'm the problem. I'm the problem because I can't accept what's going on, and I can't. But as soon as I focus on God and serving people and doing what it says in the big book, he'll give us, being all powerful, he'll give us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his work well. He says, Russ, the difference between you and me is you worry about a lot of things. And I worry about it. I don't worry about it. I think about God all the time, and I think about what he wants me to perform. And as long as I'm thinking about that, it really doesn't matter how people act, because I know they're crazy and they're upset. I'm just trying to help them. I'm just trying to love on them and help them. So it doesn't bother me because I don't take it personally. And you can't help but take it personally because that's the alcohol you drink now. Because you're just as addicted to self-pity and selfishness as you were addicted to scotch liquor. And you don't realize that right now. Because you don't realize that that's as much alcoholism as drinking scotch. And it'll hurt you just as much unless you get rid of it. And it seems ridiculous to you because you're defiant, first of all. You don't want to listen to it. And this is the way you've lived all your life. And it feels so comfortable to you to feel depressed and mad and angry. You don't want to give it up because you don't think there's any other way of living. Last story. So, my sponsor takes me to a meeting at the keynote group. And now I'm learning stuff as I'm going along, but like everybody in here, I have to live my life and get pounded and go through the trials and the tribulations. We learn the value of suffering and the seventh step, where we get sandpapered down by all sorts of stuff until we finally learn exactly, we change our attitudes and we learn what it is to be a man, what it is to be a woman, and we change, and all of a sudden life gets easier. We start slowly giving up this crap. And we become adults. You know, I sponsor more guys in their 50s and their 60s who are angry, have the emotions of an angry 13-year-old that you can possibly imagine. It's amazing. So I go to a meeting at the keynote group. And my sponsor is sitting next to me, who was Bob at the time. And a guy gets up there and he talks at the keynote group, and his name is Al Kennedy. I'd never seen him before. He had about 30 years at the time. And he starts talking. One of the things that I was, thank God, attracted to men who had a lot of time. I didn't understand them, but I somehow, when I was with my sponsor Bob, or as I was with my sponsor, you know, Joe Snyder, or even when I'm with my sponsor now, John Glenn, who's got 57 years, somehow, some way, just being with these guys, they were solid. I come from an alcohol home where, you know, my mother's all over the place. She's drinking, alcoholics are crazy, you know what I mean? And they're never, you know, you can never trust me. You can't rely on anything. These guys were as solid as a rock. And somehow, when I was with my sponsors, I always felt safe. No matter what was going on in my life, no matter what I thought was going to happen, if I could hang out with my sponsor and be there, no matter what he said, it was always the right thing, and it always calmed me down, and it always made me feel better. I can't analyze that. I'm just telling you that's the truth. And not only that, when you hang around with men like this, men who make you feel safe, who you know have something going for them, other than the other people you see in the world, they're not running around like crazy men, they always tend to hang out with other men just like them. So Joe would introduce me to Ray O'Keefe or to Al Grau or to these different, all these guys with 25, 30, 40 years and things like that who were doing that deal. And I had the benefit of hanging out with them. So he takes me to this meeting, this guy named Al Kennedy. And when you hang out with men, you know, when I first came in to AA, I had this funny feeling. I had this feeling that the way this thing worked is it was like osmosis. You would hang out with an old timer, you'd sit there and have coffee with them and things like that, and somehow the power just, you'd listen to the way they think, the way they acted and things like that, and it would just like come upon you. After a few months or a few, you know, you'd be like them, you know? And then I realized you had to do the steps, and it was all about the steps, and I did the steps, and I probably did the steps, and I did do the steps, but I got to tell you something, 30 years, I now absolutely believe that I was probably right the first time. That if you hang around with these men, you're going to end up doing the steps, you're going to end up doing something, but just by being in their company, being around them, you'll turn into them. Because like any good alcoholic, I'm a chameleon. You put me in a group of racists, I'm a racist. You put me in a, you know, a group, you know, of communists, I'm a communist. You put me in, wherever you put me, I'm going to be the best crazy person there, you know? You put me in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to be the best alcoholic, you know what I mean? You put me in a group of old timers, you know, that love it, I'm going to be that guy. You know what I mean? I'm going to be that guy. So it really, that's why it says in the book, God will help you create the fellowship you crave. Did you know I crave fellowship? We don't even realize we crave fellowship. I crave fellowship. It's either going to be with porno, or it's going to be, you know, in a titty bar, or it's going to be out there with crazy people, or it's going to be in here with crazy people. We got crazy people in here too. You know, the same well people's and on. It's I'm going to have fellowship, or I'm going to be sitting alone in my room and I'm going to be having fellowship with myself. Which is even worse, you know what I mean? So I'm sitting there watching this guy, Al Kennedy, and he's talking. And he's like one of these guys. I was brought up in the John Wayne era, and he was just one of these guys. You know, you could tell he was a man. You know, I mean, this is like a man's man. You know, he was comfortable in his own skin. He was strong, but he wasn't arrogant. He was loving and kind and sensitive, but he wasn't weak. You know what I mean? There was just something about him that you would listen to him. And you didn't understand how he was the way he was, but he seemed like comfortable. He seemed like this is a guy who's got his act together and knows who and what he is. And, you know, it was the kind of guy who said, man, I wish I could hang around him. You know, I wish I could hang with him, you know? I've met a lot of guys today and said, man, I wish I could hang with him. I wish I could be his friend. And he finished the deal, and he left the room. And I turned to my sponsor, and I said, that guy was great. And this is what my sponsor said to me. He said, you know, he's dying. And I turned to my sponsor like I didn't hear it, and I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who just did the meeting. He says, yeah, he's dying. I said, no, I'm talking about that guy, Al Kennedy, the guy who just did the meeting, you know, where he was helping people. He says, Russell, he's dying of cancer. He has 3 months to live. Now, I want to tell you something. He never mentioned anything about dying. Now, I'm an alcoholic. I'm used to discussion meetings where guys have a hangnail and they go on for 15 minutes. You know what I mean? I'm used to any problem whatsoever is good for wasting everybody's time in a meeting, because that's what we do as alcoholics. We dump everything on the table because we're going nuts and we're going to drink because we got a burning desire. You know what I mean? And that's what I think being an alcoholic is. I think that's what being an alcoholic is. I think if you're an alcoholic, you whine, you complain, and you come in and you dump this out, and that shows you're well, you know what I mean? And that's what you're really shooting for, you know? And here's this guy. You know, it's vision for you. All of a sudden, he said he's got 3 months to live. And I couldn't even wrap my brain. Could you wrap your brain around that? I couldn't wrap my brain around that. How could somebody be dying and not be upset, complaining? You know, he was just trying to help other people. But I'll tell you one thing. I may not have been able to wrap my mind about it, but I witnessed it. Like they said, I saw the nail marks in his hands. I was there. I saw that deal. It was amazing. You know what it says in the big book? It says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length together, then you're ready to take certain steps. You're not even ready unless you want what we have. That means you have to develop a we. He became one of my we's. He made me a believer. I believe that you could get to the point in here where you could even not be upset if you were dying. I believe that because I saw it happen in front of me. You know, I believe that deal because I saw it happen. You know, what would it be like if you weren't worried about dying? Boy, probably that'd be a way to live, wouldn't it? I guess if they told you I had cancer, you would feel okay anyway. It would be worth talking to the group about it because it doesn't really bother you that much. It doesn't really affect your life that much. I guess it would take a lot of things to affect your life a lot. You know what I mean? It'd be a whole different deal. I guess it would be like being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. Right? It would be like experiencing much of heaven. It seems impossible, right? Yeah, that stuff never happens. You know, but all I'm saying is, I just shared about three stories with you. These are true stories. Yeah, listen, I'm not making this stuff up. These are stories that I saw happen to me. You know, after 30 years, I have like 3,000 stories. But every time one of those stories happened to me or in front of me, it did something to me. I learned something. I saw something. You know what I also realized in here? That in that room where Al Kennedy was when that deal happened, there were 40 other people. And I thought they all saw what I saw and knew what I saw, and none of them knew it. There were 3 guys in the back talking to a blonde. There was another guy doing this. You know, that, those kind of stories, these things are all over this place. You know, but some people are just not ready to receive it. Some people are just not ready to receive the real gift of Alcoholics Anonymous, a relationship with God, so you don't have to have these fears anymore. So you can really experience the promises full-time, permanently. Some people just aren't ready to receive that gift. You know, they're still fighting that deal and still stuck in the old ideas, still addicted to the old stuff. And believe me, I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm as crazier as, you know, most people. You know, but it's just not as bad as it used to be. It's just a little bit better, I suppose, okay? So I really appreciate you allowing me to talk to you tonight, and God bless you all. Have a nice night.